Welcome, mystics, lovers, and artists to the ICN podcast. We are really excited here in season three to kick things off and talking about the various aspects of community life, especially in this new day and age. And Luke, let's jump in. What is the subject that we are going to explore today?
Yeah, so today we're kicking off welcoming shadow in our midst.
Oh, that's a fun subject.
You know, just nice, light and breezy. But it's very important because whenever we talk about community, we're doing this series on practicing mystical community. We can't bypass conflict and creative tension and struggle and shadow, because that is a part of any community. And it's unhealthy in spiritual community to want to just, you know, stay with all the sunshine and roses and have it all be lovey and wonderful and pleasant. And yes, all those things need to be there. But there's always shadow in our midst. There's always the potential for conflict and struggle. And that's just part of the nature of community. That's the inherent messiness of relationship. And when you take, you know, a relationship of 2 to 3 to 5 to 20 to 200, right? It's just going to increase that complexity. And so with any complexity, there can be that differing tension and process of learning how to be together in our differences and in our woundedness and welcoming that woundedness. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
You know, it's interesting because coming from the West Coast, I don't live in the West Coast anymore. I live in Middle Earth, but I was surrounded by the post hippie world where there were, you know, communes and cults and, you know, orgy groups up in the mountains of LA and in the surrounding areas, and none of them lasted. And I'm not casting aspersion or judgment on it, but I sometimes wonder if when groups get together that are open to, say, quote unquote, higher spiritualities, or they're wanting to jump into deep spiritual matters, if we, and I am identifying with humanity, don't honor, embrace, care for each other in our shadow, then group shadow, individual shadow can sabotage things. In fact, I'm going to say, and I don't want to jump ahead of what you're going to share here, but it's our capacity to love and honor and embrace each other's shadow that actually adds depth to the friendship and longevity. So, yeah. You know, there's more to explore there, but let's jump in. Where would you like to start?
And it takes some kind of bonding or binding or commitment, right? The word religion means to bind back, which many of us have maybe experienced in ways that haven't been the most serving of the forward movement of evolution, right? There can be a breaking free and new expressions, right? New forms. And sometimes that can be charged with an individuality in that space of differentiation. And so, you know, that's natural. That makes sense. So then when we come together in community with folks who are trying to find a new way, trying to express differently, some of the old tried and true things that hold us together in community aren't necessarily always there. So what is it that carries us through? What is it that leads us through conflict to decide to stay and not just disappear, go somewhere else, ghost people, right? What is it that carries us through? So we're going to explore that a little bit, because that's a really important element to transformation, because shadow conflict can become a portal into transformation if we're willing to go there with it, if we're willing to stick with it. But I want to be clear from the outset that there are a lot of communities, a lot of settings that are, I'll use the word toxic, and we can talk a little bit about toxicity. There are spaces where we shouldn't stay, where there's religious abuse, there's traumatizing forms of way authorities being wielded, power, you know, so we want to be clear that as we lean into shadow and conflict as a means of transformation, we're not enabling abuse. We're not excusing forms that are damaging and harmful to people. And that discernment is really crucial that we need to do on our own, trusting ourselves, that we also need to engage with others in, with third parties outside of the community that we're a part of, because if it's really insulated, that can sometimes be self-reinforcing of that. So I think what makes a community not toxic, but maybe just struggling, which every community has its struggles, is that the folks there are sincerely trying to love each other, to grow through struggle and conflict, to work through it. They're hearing, they're opening, they're trying, even with shadow, right? So that posture of orientation is a big primary marker for me, at least, of recognizing, okay, well, this community has its issues like any community, but maybe it's not toxic because the folks here are really trying to grow and evolve together through the struggle and difficulty.
You know, I think I found a title for this podcast, and I'm going to pose it to you. It's the move from ghosting to holy ghosting. And I think the ghosting is like when we cut off, right? And then when we're holy ghosting, we choose to stay and work things out if that's the healthy thing to do. And what, because I was in clergy work for almost three full decades, what I noticed as a pattern is that when a person did, for good or for ill, cut off, that didn't leave their, in many cases, not in all, it didn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
I would see them go to different communities and have the same, if they lasted two or three years here, they get to a certain point and then move somewhere else, and then move somewhere in two or three years, they move on and so forth. And I'm bringing that up because I've even found this in my own life, that the universe, or, you know, life, or whatever you want to use, loves us enough to give us ample opportunities, that there are certain things that we can't get around. Even the scriptures have an interesting way of putting this. It comes across as harsh in our post or attempts to be post patriarchal, but like, you know, spirit is not mocked. It's a very strong way of saying, but what you put in is what you get out. And this isn't to victim blame.
You reap what you sow.
Yeah, you reap what it's not victim blaming. That clergy and patriarchy has to repent for its long, long centuries of repression and so on, and abuse and all every manner of violation and boundary crossing. Yet at the same time, in this move towards post-patriarchal spiritual community, how are the ways in which we are maturing past the cut off, shut down, remove yourself, or just numb out to the drawbacks that are going to be in any community? There's no utopian spiritual community. So
yeah,
this will be a fun conversation.
For sure. Absolutely. And we have to own our stuff, right? We own our stuff and recognize that, whatever we have within us is going to follow us. And so, some of those signs of discerning, right, what is toxic and unhelpful and damaging, and then also what is it that we need to work through, right? I mean, the tendencies toward scapegoating, toward codependence, toward othering, and triangulation. There's all these movements that we make that require a degree of psychological and emotional experience and intelligence. We talked a little bit about this last time, that we work through in the midst of these things that arise in community. And it really takes a commitment to growing together in that consciousness, right? Owning our part, listening, hearing from others, getting feedback, and, like the title, the actual title, I don't know about Holy Ghosting. No. The actual title of this article, or of this episode, is, right, welcoming our shadow. So that involves letting ourselves be seen. That involves letting ourselves show up with things that we don't know about ourselves, with things that we might if we had our full sense of control, not want others to know about us. And that's a vulnerability. That's a choice that we might not be the most keen to make always, right? Especially because we have options. We can just, I don't want to face that. Let's go somewhere else. And a lot of those movements are unconscious. So let's talk a little bit about shadow. And to do that, if we decide to let ourselves be seen, if we decide to look through the window, to let others look through the window into the deeper parts of ourselves, which is a movement of mystical community into a deeper relationality. At ICN, what we have intentionally began with is to start with golden shadow. Because it's hard enough to let ourselves be seen for the darker shadows, for the things in us that we don't see. But what golden shadow is, so Carl Jung developed this idea of the shadow and that which is unconscious, that which we don't see about ourselves. And most often when people use that, they're referring to the things that are negative or are suppressed or bad about ourselves that we hide from. But the golden shadow is those things within us that are wonderful and beautiful and loving and good, but we also repress those. We also hide those because we can't accept our own light. We can't see the ways that we are divine. We can't come to embrace the degree and depth and brilliance of our own light. So we've covered that over maybe with messages from our childhood, maybe with woundings from the past, with shame, with guilt, with fear, with all sorts of movements that cover over this golden shadow. So what we really seek to do in our practice of community and our We Space groups is to mirror the light first to one another, to behold one another in love and tell each other what we see in a mystical sense. That's part of our practice of resonating prayer so that, you know, if we hear them enough, if people keep telling us these things, maybe eventually we start to believe them.
I used a meme recently and working with some spiritual directors where the meme says what we think spiritual growth looks like. And it has a pie chart, a whole pie chart that says meditating peacefully on my pillow. And then underneath it, it says what it actually looks like, unpacking trauma, taking responsibility. You know, it kind of goes around the circles, and it really is true. Golden shadow, all of these things, they can be addressed and they can be healed in the sense that when we practice vulnerability with ourselves, with the sustaining, penetrating spirit, things can come up. We can address them, we can heal them, but it plays out always at a practical level in the way that we connect with one another or don't connect with one another, the way that we practice vulnerability. I don't have an axe to grind, but I think maybe this might be an interesting way to set up the things that you're going to share, that in the integral framework, the larger integral world, they have the wake up, clean up, grow up, show up. And very recently, they added open up. And I just thought that was so interesting that for so many years, that wake up, clean up, grow up, show up, which is brilliant, is a very somewhat individualized, privatized way of looking at what spiritual development may look like or how we may work with it. But that opening up is such a key factor to how it interplays with the other four. So where would you like to jump into?
And it's hard. I mean, it can be hard to open up, and maybe that's why that was perhaps a shadow of integral, right? Is the communal element, the aspect of really coming together in ways that are communal and open and relational at the deeper spiritual levels. Cause a lot of spiritual practice is highly individualized, as we've talked about on this podcast many times. So we're not geared or trained or brought up with a great degree of communal intelligence. We talked about this last time, right? We have to cultivate our capacity for connectedness. We need to grow in how we relate to one another. So opening up can be a really scary movement.
Yes.
People even, you know, social anxieties, introversion, right? There's these personality types. There's things that, ways that we are each particular and unique, and the relational space in our society is thorny. It's messy. It's not practiced well, from our families to our, school settings, to sports teams, to whatever it may be.
Dare we say we politics?
Oh gosh. Yeah. That goes without saying. Right. So we don't have this built into us. Right. And so again, we have to cultivate that capacity, but then we have to recognize how fragile this is and how gentle we need to be when we wade into these territories, because a lot of times what will happen is we'll get triggered or there'll be some kind of conflict and we'll get activated. And then we respond out of that wounding with some form of attack, whether that be passive or active. And that just further breaks down trust and breaks down the relationship, and people close up. They do the opposite of opening up. So that's why, again, it's so important to begin with love, to begin with recognizing, okay, the first ways that we're going to open up to one another is seeing one another in love and calling forth that which is strengthening, comforting, and encouraging, which comes from First Corinthians. These practices are ancient biblical practices that the early church did to love one another, to actually, how do we do that? How do we love one another? Well, strengthen, encourage, comfort one another, look at each other, see what is there, resonate with them on a deep level, and call that forth. And that, from that ground of connection, of interconnection, of love, of presence, then we have that deep connection, we have that we space, we have a felt sense and experience of this field of love. And maybe then we can start to wade into more of the ways that we can address the shadow in our midst, personally and collectively, with delicateness, with care, and with love.
It is interesting that if you're going to mention Corinthians, that the church was experiencing a high level of mystical giftings and it became competitive. There was boundary crossing going on in that community. They were channeling spirits to the point where he had to say, you need to test what spirit you're channeling because you can't say Jesus is accursed. In other words, these guys were doing a lot of high profile spiritual practices, and yet he has to create a zenith point in his letter to say all of these things, actually they may be fascinating to the spiritual ego, but if the shadow is kind of running things in the background, you're just making noise. You're literally, mm-hmm. you're not being cohesive with one another. You're being competitive, not completative, if you will. There's a sense of, again, recognizing each other's shortcomings, but instead of pointing them out in a way that's attacking either passively or aggressively, is saying, how can we be a healing presence, which requires love, not namby-pamby love, not new agey coexist love, mm-hmm. but a sense of interconnectivity that results in the opening up.
Yeah, absolutely. A deep, grounded, embodied love. I mean, that verse that I quoted from 1 Corinthians 14, we do all this, you know, for the purpose of strengthening, encouraging, comforting one another. That's right after the famous 1 Corinthians 13 chapter on love. Right. And so, right, yeah, speak with the tongues of men and angels but have not love. I'm just a clanging cymbal, right? So that's why our first foundational value at ICN is love. And, you know, again, love can have, can be cheapened as can mean a lot of different things to different people, but in the depth of love that we are talking about, it has to begin there. It has to start there.
You know, I just want to jump in real quick. One of the things that I just can't stand about religious attempts to capture Jesus is that they don't ever know how to capture what a holy man or holy woman can look like. Because most of the time, Jesus is like a hippy dippy, you know, peace, love, and happiness kind of guy, or he's like super sensitive and always smiling. A holy person isn't You know that you're in the presence of love, but sometimes there's a fierceness to that love that says, you got to be liberated from this thing that's got you. I love that passage. Sorry, we're going super biblical on this. I don't know why I should apologize, but we're looking at scriptures through an integral lens. So let's not qualify it with hypersensitivity remarks. But there's a passage where a wealthy, young, self-righteous guy comes to Jesus and says, I want to follow you, man. I love the way, I think it's in Mark, it says he turned towards him. So there was no passivity in the thing that it, and it says it, he turned towards him, he looked at him, and he loved him. And he kind of tests him. And the guy says, hey man, I've done it all. He says, but you still lack one thing. Your possessions possess you. If you really want to know what I'm talking about and not just go to quote unquote heaven when you die, but to have that experience in the here and now, you have to be liberated from your greed. And he is often called the 13th would-be disciple. He's the only one who got a personal invitation from the liberator and said, I can't do it. So I guess I'm tempering some of these things because we're not saying this is a license to be harsh or cruel. I you don't see Jesus being that way, but you certainly do see him as a holy man being very gentle with nominalized people and very, very direct with people who believe that their rightness is more important than their capacity to connect with other people.
Absolutely. And that stance of humility, of openness, of again attending to the process, right? We're seeking to grow and get better. That's where we bring the gentleness. And yeah, there are times when we need to call out, when we need to say, nope, that is not good, that is not right, that's not okay. And of course, we have to be very careful of projection there.
Right.
It's very easy, especially for certain personality types, right, to want to throw it out there, to put the, you know, speck out of someone else's eye with the log in our own, quoting more scripture. So,
right.
So of course, that's it's not a, it is gentle, but it's not timid. It, whenever we move into community and in the space of love, and especially as we start talking about shadow and calling one another into a deepening of transformation, I mean, that takes work. That takes a willingness and commitment to engaging in things that we might not choose on our own, or we might not see about ourselves. And that's one of the great gifts of community. I mean, this shadow work is a total blessing if we can get there, because we need it. We need it so desperately in our culture of individuality. So much of our shadow goes just completely unconscious and stays with us and motivates our actions. So we all have the shadow. We all have woundedness. And so we begin with that radical acceptance in knowing that we're not after perfection here, right? We're not after cleaning everyone else up. Nope. We're not even after cleaning ourselves up completely and become spotless, right? Welcoming the shadow is more about accepting and embracing our woundedness with one another and offering a hand when it's asked for to help us become a little more whole, a little more healed, and to do that together, because we'll heal a lot better together than if we try to do it all on our own.
Yes. Yeah. There's two things that I'd like to offer here. One is a little esoteric and the other is maybe a little more practical. I often have dreams, sometimes visions, though not as often, but in this dream, and I won't get into the weeds on it because I know sometimes when people share dreams, other people kind of shut down and I don't want to hear about your dreams. But this one definitely dealt with shadow. And in the past, the shadow always felt more important or more powerful than me. It was always just primal fear in these dreams throughout a traumatic childhood. And then about a year ago, we were in a haunted house and this demonic being was in there, and I told my family to get behind me and I was going to intervene. And I went out onto the porch and this demonic being became an absolutely beautiful angelic being. And we ended up merging. And I heard Spirit say to me, you are now loving shadow. And that does not mean that I'm in some high state of being a holy person. And that's not what I'm trying to convey here. But I have noticed over the years, speaking of Jungian psychology, there's a lot of Jungian work going on in here. And there's been a long trajectory heading in this direction. But it was telling me that there was this merging with shadow that was taking place at the at that subconscious level, unconscious level, perhaps. And it's something that's been coming more online. So that leads me to this, maybe this helpful situation. I had someone that I work with who has a bite to them, and they had sent some pretty aggressive and passive aggressive communications, and I knew I had to deal with it, but I also wanted to deal with it in a way that was holy to me and holy to them. And so when I went into this situation, I decided I am going to have very clear boundaries, and I'm also going to honor their clear boundaries. So I'm not going to attack, and I'm not the hammer, and then this person becomes the nail, and I'm not going to be the nail and allow myself to be hammered. So it became this like living example of saying, you know, there's no way around this. And let me just preface. I hit the gym hard before I knew I was heading in that meeting. I had a lot of like anxious energy. Like, I know I'm going to have to do with this. So I went to the gym. I hit it hard. I got out some of those aggressive energies or those anxious energies. And I went in, and the meeting unfolded in a way to where there was greater clarity to the relationship, to the group that I was working with. This is not ICN, by the way. I'm not speaking in veiled terms. This is a completely different group. And it was just a helpful way of just saying, I went in saying, here is where I have been unclear. Here is where I have, I'm sorry to get into the specifics, but I feel like it's important just to give a living example. Here's where I have been unclear. I have been accustomed to things happening a certain way in my life. I'm in a new situation. I'm getting used to the language, the culture, the rules, the quote unquote politics. And I don't want to keep doing that. However, I also have needs, and these are what those needs are. And if this group or this person or whatever the situation is can't do that, then do not take offense that I will be doing this and I need people to give me that space to get it done. It was an opportunity where I knew spirit was give the life, universe, whatever, was giving me an example to say, you've been weak in this area. This has been a weaker spot for you. It's not like it's completely weak, but it's been a weaker blind spot for me. And it ended up in this particular situation working out really well. The person came up to me privately and just said, I apologize. You know, I don't want to do that. And we had a private conversation, but I want to offer that maybe as a little bit of a practical way of working through my shadow first and then saying, you know, this person does too. It's not my job to hammer that out in front of people, but to be clear and to offer them clarity and to offer a way to bond the potential friendship and relationship that was there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a beautiful story. And that is, a great example of, community, communal relationships. I mean, that's the practice ground for growth, right? And coming to own your shadow, like you shared in the dream of the embracing that. And then how do we live from that place of saying, okay, well, here's my stuff. I'm going to be with it. I'm going to work it out, literally work out, literally. Move some of those energies through. I'm going to do my best to set clear boundaries, which we can talk more about boundaries later, perhaps. And I'm going to have self-respect to represent myself with clarity. And so we own our stuff and we bring it to the table. And that's actually more loving and caring for one another than when we just let it pass, when we just, set it to the side, especially when we have open issues, which we're going to talk about in a minute here. But first, I also want to acknowledge that, some of the things that we have in our shadow, some of the stuff that we carry is going to be, things that we need to work through, not in relationship, things that we need to work through in therapy, in professional settings, right? They're going to affect us in our relationships, but it's not always the place for some of the deeper shadow stuff, for some of our real in-depth woundedness. We have to be careful there. And I just want to say, and I'm sure David, you won't mind, both David and I are in therapy. We do work. We work with energy healing. We're doing this work in separate settings as well, because not everything belongs in the space of community. Right. So especially, and there can be times, and that this relates to boundaries, when things come up and we say, this is above our pay grade. This is a little more than what we probably should be trying to navigate through and work through in this communal setting. And okay, what does this look like to shift that into a different, maybe more professional setting where there are stronger boundaries, there's different expectations, different mutual agreements. So just want to be clear about that as well, that sometimes that's needed and necessary in our shadow work.
Interesting pre-psychological development that Saint Benedict did called the Ladder of Integrity. I'm not going to do that now on this podcast, but if there's people that are interested, just give it a Google and look at what the Saint Benedict's Ladder of Integrity, how, because this is way before all this stuff, and he's putting this together to help his communities work through conflict. I've used it before privately, and then I've used it with my previous staff. We would walk the ladder of integrity, so it would remove accusational language. It's just a fascinating thing that, you know, both Saint Ignatius and Saint Benedict had very fascinating pre-psychological ways of helping their communities work through conflict. For some people, they also enjoy the resource of emotionally healthy spirituality. I am not doing a high endorsement of that. They're super evangelical, but they have really done their good work of being both open-minded, of being psychologically grounded and spiritually integral. So, resources to throw out there.
Sure. Yeah. And I'll throw another one out. We often use an ICN, the drama triangle, which is just recognizing the patterns of victim, persecutor, and rescuer that are at play a lot in these areas of shadow. So that's more kind of dealing with the situational and the ways that enacts. Shadow work is kind of more getting to the underlying root causes of some of those behaviors and actions. So to dive in to talk about shadow a little bit more directly, I want to use a framework that is called Johari's window. So just picture like a square, a rectangle, and there's a cross through the center. So there's four panes. There's an upper left, an upper right, a lower left, a lower right, kind of like the integral quadrants, but this is different. It's a window pane. And on one side is what I know or don't know. And the other one is what other people know or don't know. So in the top left corner, there is what I know about me and what other people know about me. These are called open issues, right? There's nothing hidden here. There's no shadow, but this can still be a place where conflict arises. When there are open issues, things that are known, a lot of times we have people in community who are conflict avoidant, conflict averse. I'll put myself in that category. And it can be really hard to be clear and direct and to address issues that are there in the community, but no one wants to talk about. This could have to do with power dynamics. It could have to do with not wanting to rock the boat, right? All sorts of things that maybe we carry from our upbringing and how we handle conflict. But when we have open issues that are present, that are there in the community, how can we set up containers for clear communication? I love, David, in your story, talking about that clarity, right? Having a space that was dedicated to addressing this issue and talking about it. It sounds like, I don't know if this person knew what they were doing. Maybe they did a bit, maybe they didn't. It's never totally clear, black and white. These window panes kind of overlap with one another, right? But for the most part, when there's an open issue, we will serve ourselves and one another better if we can find a healthy way to address it and engage with these things rather than letting them simmer below the surface and trying to avoid them.
Yes. So these are the open issues. I'm curious, how do we go to that next level.
Yeah. So those are the things that are known, and we can talk more about those later if we want. But as we're looking primarily at shadow, let's move down, which is things that are known to self, but not known to others. So this is actually kind of the opposite of shadow. These are the things that we intentionally hide from other people because we don't want them to know about us. Right. Yeah. So this is where vulnerability comes in. This is where trust comes in, right? As we get to know each other better, as we deepen in relationship, we open up, right? We choose to reveal things about ourselves to others. This is not a premature dumping of all of our emotional vulnerability that can sometimes happen in community when people are lonely and they're looking for, we don't use these as a means of connection, but in the appropriate time and setting, when something is being called forth from us, we can reveal that. Confession is another practice that relates to this, right? Where we say, okay, there's something that I know that other people don't, that I need to confess. And that might have a lot of baggage for some folks, right? In the ways that confession has been practiced or experienced in the past in our lives. But at its core, there is a really healthy element of confession and different ways that we can do that, right? To open up to presence, these deeper parts of ourselves that we don't want others to know about. And that's essential in community, to have vulnerability, to have trust, to recognize that we can only go so far and so deep in our intimacy if there are things that are still hidden from one another.
Yeah. And I'd like to just add some flavor. The original meaning of confession was connection. And what are the stumbling blocks towards having greater connection with self, with God, with others? What it became was institutionalized and moral. It was always about, well, this is where I personally have failed morally, right? And I don't want to get off on this, but I mean, it really became another privatized thing. We would never have to corporately address our greed or corporately address our violence or, you know, all those kinds of things that you could be, you know, as greedy beyond the czars of Russia and the pharaohs of Egypt. But if, you know, you masturbated, then you're in a lot of trouble. And it's just like, good God, this,
yeah, like, it got pretty twisted.
Yeah. What's connection was the point. And so I just wanted to give a little nuance there. Confession is important. How I've experienced in my life always results in a greater connection with myself and with the other person or with a group of people. Okay, so let's keep.
Yeah, and hold on one more thing. It doesn't have to just be confessing sin or, you know,
that's
things
not the way
about
I was
that we
it.
Don't.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we have hidden thorns, right? Things that oh, you know, what's under this leaf? And we can just tell people like, hey, I really struggle with this.
Yes.
This is something that, hey, in relationship, I'm really bad at asking for help.
Yes.
So, okay, there you go. I just let people know that. Now they recognize something about me that they might not have known before. It's no longer covered over. So they don't get poked when they think, why is this person not, you know, why are they not asking me for help? Why are they not reaching out to me? Right. So it's just those sorts of things as well, where we open up and reveal things about ourselves for the sake of connection, so that we can, you know, be in community better together.
Well, and I'm like, be playful with me on this. You used sin in that post-Constantinian institutional sense of being having done something morally wrong. The original intention of sin was just missing the mark, which is the example that you just gave. Hey, look,
right.
I have trouble asking for help. It's a real weak spot in my life. Or, you know, some other example where it's like, I
Your
hide,
turn, David, what's,
yeah,
one
yeah. So I may hide my sadness from other people, you know, and I don't want to be appearing as weak or as some kind of drama queen or whatever it is. Like that's a tendency on my part to say, I am feeling very down about something and it's hard for me to connect. And I'm sure some of that's my Enneagram 4 wiring, but, that's an area where I've learned to be more, open. Hey, I'm having a rough day.
Yeah, that's good. And then also, like, you learn that about yourself, but also in the context of community, when you share that, then that helps us see and love you better, right? To say, you know, to be sensitive to that, to recognize and maybe even invite and say, hey, you know, you look like you might be feeling a little down today. Like, do you want to talk about it? Mm. Right. Make space for it from the other perspective. Or maybe in my example, someone would say, "Ooh, you seem like you got a lot going on. Is there anything you need help with?" Right. Or, you know, just things like that, that's how community.
Oh, well, let me just
can engage with those.
Yeah. Since we're going to do this, if we're going to practice vulnerability, I'm good at doing that for others. At least I think I'm good at doing that for others. That's the way I show love and care for others. And then there's the blind spot, right? Do I allow people to do that for me? Or when they do it, am I shunting it, pushing it off to the side? Say, "Oh, no, I'm good." You know, when they're actually trying to show, reciprocate that love. So that's, you know, over the years, that's something that I've been working with. But gosh, that thing runs deep. It still runs deep. Mm-hmm. But my natural inclination is to say, "I care for you."
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, so.
Right. So that flips us into the next quadrant because a lot of those things that we need and long for will move into our shadow and we'll try to do them for others. Right. And we're unconscious of the ways that we're now we're moving to the things that are not known to the self, but are known to others. So this is the upper right quadrant of the window. This is what we call our blind spots or our unknown areas, right? When you're driving, the blind spot is that which you can't see right in the mirrors. It's that which is a part of us that other people can see at times, maybe not always, but maybe in certain settings or in the context of community relationship. This is the kind of prime quadrant of shadow, right? The things that we are unconscious of, but that others can see in us. And so when we want to grow through our blind spots, when we want to become more conscious, when we want to become more whole, how do we grow through our blind spots? Well, we can't do it by ourselves because inherently it's something we don't see. So we truly need community. We need others to reflect those things back to us. And in the context of practicing mystical community, I think in a healthy sense, these would be things that we have to welcome and invite. We have to give people permission to share these things for us. Very rarely will someone be able to just say, "Hey, I see a blind spot in you. Let me tell you about it."
Right.
Most of the time, our shadow is going to rear up. Our defense mechanisms will go into full force, whatever those look like, and we're not going to be able to hear it. So in welcoming shadow in our midst, in this quadrant, in this area, this can look like in an intimate community saying, "I welcome your feedback. I welcome your perspective to share things in me that I don't always see about myself because I want to know those things," right? This can come up sometimes as well in some of our mystical practices in the relational space, right? Where something can emerge and it might not be all in the light. There might be something there that has an invitation for growth. And we have to be really delicate with that. We have to be gentle. We don't want to shine the light too bright to blind someone in trying to see their own blind spots. And then, of course, there's always the issue of projection we need to be careful of. So this is a really delicate space. And that's why I think it's crucial that we make the choice to give those that we trust the permission to do shadow work together in the context of community.
So I'll give another example, since I think therapists are today's confessors in a lot of ways. And they, I'm not here to, you know, dump on good confessors in the Roman Catholic tradition, but I remember being with my therapist many years ago, Dr. Ted. And I said, you know, I was working with the Jungian archetypes at the time. And I said, you know, I may have shared this on the podcast too at one time, but I'll share it in this context. You know, I could do the king by nature of the role that I have. You know, I can do the lover. That's how I tend to be. That comes somewhat natural to me. I really relate to the magus the most, but the warrior. And he just said in a real passing sense, he said, "And that's your shadow." And it was just one of those moments where I was like, the heavens parted, the dove descended. It was like, my God, you're right. That is such a blind spot for me. Those boundaries that I allow people to cross, or, you know, not standing my ground on certain things or saying, this far, no further. That became a massive gaping blind spot that became a lot of hard work over the years. I'll just give a real quick example that I hope I've not shared before. Just the next day, I tell you the truth, I was at a shop. I got shamed out of that shop. The woman totally shamed me and said, you know, you should be letting other people eat here. And I just ducked out of there so fast. So I knew the next day the universe was like giving me an excite, like, are you going to do it? You know it now. Are you going to do it? So with hands, you know, trembling, it sounds so embarrassing to say this, but with a little bit of trembling, it was, I went in there and very respectfully said, you know, you shamed me out of here. I enjoy coming to this place. And I was not aware of any, there was no written rules that if you're eating something and on a computer that somehow you're supposed to leave after you get your food. That was rude. And I'm not going to be passive aggressive and give you a negative view on Yelp, but I want you to know that this will catch up to you if you keep doing it. So it was one of those things where it's like, man, I hate it when the universe shows us something and we have to do something about it. But
yeah, we actually have to do something.
We do.
It. We have to change our action. Yeah.
But there was the blind spot. Yeah. I was with someone who I knew loved me, listened to me, cared for me, who I paid them to do that. But they, you know, did have a genuine care for me. And so it became that spot where he was able to just gently say, there's your shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so often it's just that little gentle word. It's that, that really kind way, and therapists are trained to know how to do that. And so in the context of community, it can be tricky. And we need to, to trust one another and also be willing to help one another in that. And that can be difficult, right? As sometimes some people have shared with me, I get reactive and then I come back and I say, okay, that was actually helpful. I needed to hear that. And can we talk about how that happened? Right. So maybe next time we can do it in a way that I might be more receptive. And the light of awareness, you know, right. It dawned on you, it came, you saw it. It's no longer a blind spot, but we still act out of those patterns and ways of being, even if now we see it. And that's another area where community can really help us. I'll use another loaded word of accountability, right? Ways that when we're actually in deep relationship with people, and shadow has been revealed and we've talked about it, it's there. And then when I continue to act out of it, right, there's like, oh, hey, remember this, you know? So, so that's another aspect of the ongoing practice of community, because shadow doesn't just go away because we shine a light on it, because we see it. It's still a part of our natural compulsions and, ways of being that take time to repattern and to transform through.
You know, maybe this might be a helpful way to work with this as we're wrapping up, is that all structures, be they personal or collective in some way, church or religious institutions or groups, politics, all structures are inherently conservative, and they have to be because they have to hold to some kind of guideline. But so often structures become shackles because of their inherent conservatism. Like, we hold to these boundaries. And I just want to nuance this a little bit and say, you know, the stereotype might be that the way the stereotype works is the conservative, at least in today's kind of world right now, is kith and kin, the people who think and vote like me. The progressive is a little broader in their circle of empathy. It goes to the nominalized, but then it tends to nominalize the people that don't think like them, right? There's these structures that we have that are inherently conservationalist in the way that they work. It takes a lot of courage, vulnerability, and desire to prioritize connectivity above structure that says, I'm going to go beyond the confines of that inherent structure that says, this is the way that I am, just accept it. And to be able to move into that, say that that connection is greater than construct.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And, you know, one of the constructs, the structures, the forms that we put up give shape to the ways that we are together, the ways that we are within ourselves, and those are necessary.
Absolutely.
But I think as well, that leads us into the last quadrant, which I'll talk about the lower right, which is the unknown, not known to self, not known to others. And this is something that is always at play within us in any communal setting. There are forces, woundings, energies that are below the surface that neither of us are conscious of, that that maybe no one in the community is really aware of how they are affecting things. And that can seem a little harrowing, perhaps, this mysterious unknown, this deep, dark bottom of the ocean space that can feel murky and scary. But in a community of faith, we can hold these spaces of the great mystery with a fundamental okayness, with a recognition that all that is unknown is held in the deeper ground of God. It may be imperfect, it may be unhealed, but all is well, and all manner of things shall be well. And so we can know what that these forces are in play, even though we're not conscious of them, even though we don't recognize them. And sometimes things will arise from the deep and there'll be a big wave that comes up and rocks us. And we're like, whoa, what was that? Instead of responding in fear, we can just hold it in silence and be with the mystery, and just sit with one another in that mysterious unknown.
And I'd say even if fear does come up as a natural response, that the connectivity is strong enough to withstand it.
Yeah.
You know, the word mystery gets used quite a bit by the original Paul, who writes a lot of the New Testament. And I think sometimes he uses that word because it's lives up to its meaning. Mystery is... it unfolds. In the Greek, that term means unfolding mystery. So it is dark. It's a luminous darkness. And sometimes that, even if we know that God is involved, it's still scary. It doesn't remove our capacity to just go, I don't know, or I don't know what's next, or I don't know how this thing is going to unfold or evolve or change over time. But I know that our relationships are becoming strong enough to enter into that unfoldment, that evolution, that progress
together. Absolutely. And that's really the fundamental calling, inspiration, reality of community, is that, well, at least we're in it together, right? At least we can go through this by each other's side, because it's way worse doing it alone. And, you know, as we talk about shadow, as we talk about conflict, I think maybe a semi-conscious or unconscious question that many of us might hold is it really worth it? Like, this is beyond our comfort zone, right? Dealing with these things is not something that we would probably sign up for just because. But these things are going to happen in community. And so I think there's that sense of, oh, do I really want to go through this? Do I really want to reveal things about myself and open up? Do I really want to have to confront issues that I would just rather leave under the surface? Do I want people to see things in me that I don't even see in myself? But the truth is that this is the way things are regardless, right? These things are present in us and in one another. And if we keep running from them, if we keep moving from community to community, if we keep avoiding those things that are suppressed, are only going to continue to damage and wound us in unconscious ways. And so we need healthy community to move into these practices together so that we can grow, so that we can heal, so that we can be present. Yes, we're still going to be wounded, but we're going to be on the path to becoming more conscious so that these things aren't subverting us. They're not, what's the word? They're not, sabotaging. They're not sabotaging our lives in ways that we're unaware of. And so to really do that, we probably need healthy forms of healing. with in a professional setting, with therapy, with energy work, with hypnotherapy, all sorts of different forms out there that can do some of the deep work. And we need to welcome it and be with these shadows in the midst of our communal settings, because they're always there regardless. And so when we can welcome them, we can bring them into conscious participation, and we can seek to be with one another in these ways, in a healthier sense, with open communication, with vulnerability, with trust, with boundaries. We can share in the ongoing process of loving evolution of ourselves and one another.
Yeah, and I'll maybe sum up the old adage that the pattern, the inescapable pattern of evolution, is that, at least in the relational realm, the old adage goes like, if you've been hurt by a father, you're going to be healed by a father. If you've been hurt by a group, you're going to be healed by a group. You cannot evolve. I cannot evolve if I'm not willing to enter into that mystery of saying, I was vulnerable once. I got violated in some way. It hurt. I don't want to make that mistake again. And it's like, you got to risk. We got to take a risk on love. We got to take a risk on connection. And I think that this, what you've laid out in this podcast, has just been such a helpful model for ways of exploring, trusting, being willing to risk of entering into the worthwhile realm of deeper spirituality, which requires deeper connection in all of those realms: professional, private, collective, relational.
And now we got to actually go do it. And what situation comes up tomorrow that will be like, oh, I did it again, right? Again, it's not about perfection. It's not about becoming totally clean, but we hold it in the light. We hold it in love with one another, being with one another in our woundedness as we heal together.
May it be.